Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. This isn't just about money. This is about life. And now the host of the Power of the Purse podcast, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life, not too long ago, when I believed three things about money. One, women are not supposed to talk about or be included in any conversations about money. Two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years, until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise. And it was something I could not only understand, but teach to other women. Too many times I've heard stories from women who ought to know better but didn't, until they were forced to, because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. This podcast will add another chapter to a rich history of successful women who, when faced with some personal challenges, found the ability to step beyond them. We'll examine some of the truths they made up about money from their life experiences and how that shaped the paths they chose. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Dorothy Vidotta Chow. Dorothy is the owner of Alta Gracia, and she is. It has a very interesting story, which I'd like to read. I was an overweight stay-at-home mom of four children. About 10 years ago, I started taking a Latin dance class once a week at my children's ballet school. The realization of being overweight came when I tried to dance and there was so much of me to move and my body was going in all directions. I was humiliated and devastated at how distant I was from me, the me I used to be and the me who I no longer recognized, a stranger in this body. This was my bottom, my turning point. This crossroads provided me with two distinct choices in my mind, succumb or fight. I fought. In the late 70s, I loved disco dancing, and maybe there was that little part of me that still connected to that girl and wanted her to emerge and take control of this wobbly, out-of-shape blob and whip her into shape. I struggled with my confidence, identity, purpose, meeting, and through dance, I always felt like all of those insecurities melted away when I moved on the dance floor and the beat of the music washed over me into a meditative state where I felt safe, confident, and understood. Learning to dance salsa, cumbia, merengue, and bachata were difficult to learn. The rhythms of this music is different, the movements complex. I struggled as my teacher repeated the choreography, breaking it down simply at first and then building it as the confidence with the movement emerged, so did I. In the first year of taking one class per week on Sunday mornings, I lost 56 pounds. Everything changed. This is going to be, I can't wait to hear the rest of this. I love it. I love it. Okay. So thank you very much for being a guest. I'm so excited to have you here, Dorothy Vidotta Chow. And just let's jump into some of the fun things we want to talk about. How about this Alta Gracia? What is it?
Alta Gracia in Spanish translates to full of grace. I've always had a very special relationship with the Virgin Mother. I grew up in a Catholic household, and I always felt the Virgin Mother's presence in my life, albeit I'm not very religious. I do feel like I have a very special relationship with the Blessed Mother. I think it's that sense of the female connection, and I think that's where it comes from, and always feeling safe and guided through her. And thus, Alta Gracia, full of grace.
That's great. Okay. And what is it that people do when they come to visit you at Alta Gracia?
I think mostly communicate. And I always feel that the physical, the actual workout as a trainer is secondary. I feel like we have to start with the mind first. We have to start in a place where there's comfort, where there's connection, and people feel safe. And then we go from there.
And how do you establish that level of comfort and trust?
By listening. I think by listening and offering support and understanding that we don't have to come from this place of perfection, mm-hmm. that we have to come from a place of acceptance of what our story is and how we make what we have into the best possible thing for us. And everyone's different. There is no cookie cutter mold for that. And I think once we accept who we are and accept our flaws, but we have to accept the things that make us unique and wonderful, that we have to establish that, all of that, as just the place where you have to start is with what you have and acceptance of what you have, good, bad, and indifferent, and then go from there.
And how do you get people to discover all that? Is there some kind of an initial interview that you take people through?
Initially, we just sit down and chat, and usually by the time people get to me, they've reached a dead end. They're frustrated. And usually a lot of the problems that they come to me with are byproducts of something bigger. So it's the straw that broke the camel's back, and they're fat, they're overweight, they're unhappy, they have health issues, knee problems, hip problems, sleep problems, menopause, all kinds of problems. Usually I get women, mostly women, who are in my age range, menopausal, postmenopausal, and then elderly women. I gravitate to elderly women. I just feel like they have these great stories. And they survived. They're survivors. Yeah. So there's a lot to tap into there. And it's a two-way street, you know? So that's what generally works. I think just listening and, listening and really understanding and just saying, you know, it's okay to feel like that. It's okay to be at the end of your rope. And let's just work back from there. And let's see how we got there to the end of that rope.
Is the training, the personal training you do for what you said are elderly women, is that significantly different than what you would do for, let's say, a perimenopausal woman?
Oh, absolutely. I think as we age, we're looking for a better quality movement. Yeah. We're just looking to get from the couch to the kitchen table. You know, that sit and bend and stand and pick up the mail and shovel the snow and all those daily tasks that are just becoming more and more difficult, increasingly difficult as we age to go from one place to the other. Getting in and out of a car is very difficult as we age, especially if we are obese, if you have any kind of health issues, osteoporosis, you know, there are many issues that we have just by aging, and they become debilitating to some people and turn into depression. And a lot of people at that point become reclusive because they don't want people to see that they're aging. They're very embarrassed. They feel like they've lost their spark in some way, and they do. So they isolate, which is the worst.
Well, how do you get them out of that isolation and over to see you?
I think, you know, by striking up a conversation, I've always been very good at doing that with strangers. I just find one commonality. It could be, you know, a beautiful day, and did you see that robin in the nest? It could be something as simple as that, just to strike up a conversation over here at Lake Scranton or at a restaurant or just about anywhere, picking up some groceries and just starting a conversation with, when I see just a single person standing there, usually an elderly person, I'll strike up a conversation. I've never had a situation where anyone has been negative. They've always been very open. Mm-hmm. I think it's all the way you approach it. I think if you approach things fully, full eye contact, and you approach someone, especially in a grocery store where there's a commonality and you're buying vegetables at the same time and those artichokes look really good. And, you know, you just kind of mention how beautiful those artichokes are. You know, it will generally start up a conversation out of nowhere. So I've always had that ability.
Well, I see that from your website that you have group sessions as well as individual or private training. So what would someone who wanted to go into a group setting need to do that would make them okay with a group setting versus somebody who needed personal attention? Why would you be the one that would help them decide whether they would be more suited for a group session or an individual session?
That's a very good question. So there are that segment of the population who wants personal one-on-one training because that is where their comfort level is. They don't want anyone else in the room. It's a trust issue. They just want that one person who is me, where they've connected, and that's all they want. Then there are those people who are more extroverted, I would say, who look at group exercise as a social event. Mm-hmm. I'll see you on Tuesday nights at 6. It makes them accountable. There is that segment that needs that socialization, that needs to be in that group because they don't want the limelight on them. They don't want the focus on them. They want to be part of a bigger group because that's where they're more comfortable. So it really is a personal decision. It's also a financial decision because personal training is much more expensive than a group training. You know, one-on-one is generally much more expensive, but usually those are the people that have kind of odd times or, you know, they need to be in and out by 6 and 7 o'clock in the morning or they're mm-hmm. late at night people. They're usually professional people who have yeah. that. I have more stay-at-home moms that want to do the group thing. So that's usually how it works out. More of a demographic and also a financial and a personal choice.
How many years or months or whatever have you been doing this type of training?
Well, I was first a group fitness instructor, mm-hmm. And I got a lot of encouragement from Jeannie Mendez Doman, who was one of my group instructor teachers, and she encouraged me quite a bit to become a group exercise teacher. And she loved my story. She was a part of my story and she encouraged me and pushed. So I did that, with not a lot of effort. It came very naturally.
Good.
So that was awesome. And I felt really great about that. So about 2 years later, I immediately went to the YMCA in the Greater Morristown, New Jersey YMCA, where the fitness instructor there who is the fitness director now, her name is Kelly, she encouraged me to become a personal trainer because I had had great success with group exercise classes at the YMCA and got a lot of positive feedback. And so she encouraged me. I failed. I failed the first time. And I said, okay, that's it for me. It's too much anatomy, too much kinesiology. My brain doesn't work that way. And a year later, she said, you're doing it again. And I said, no, I'm not. And she said, yes, you are, because I've just comped you on it through the YMCA. And yay, I passed with only 6 questions wrong. So I nailed it.
Wonderful. That's great.
Yeah. It was a highlight. It was a highlight in my life. It really was.
And when was that?
That was about 5 years ago.
Okay.
The personal training was about 5 years ago. Group fitness, I think it was about 8 years ago, 7, mm-hmm. 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful news. I like that. The one that kept cracking the whip over you and saying, no, you're not going to say no. That was great. So then you moved from that area back to the Scranton area, and you're mm-hmm. a native of this area. So what was behind that move? Why did you decide to do that?
The illness of both my parents. Mm-hmm. My mother died of complications of COPD at age 71. She was mm-hmm. a very heavy smoker. My father battled both Parkinson's and Alzheimer's for the last 4 years. He deceased last year. I lost both my parents in a 2-year period.
Wow.
And my father was 78 years old. My mother was 71. You know, I missed them terribly, and I inherited their home here in Scranton, and mm-hmm. Came back to do a little bit of work in the house. And felt very comforted being back after they left this earth. I felt very comforted and decided that this is where I was going to put down my roots now. I was empty nesting. My children are all gone to school, are all in school still, in college and grad school. And it was time for me to make a decision on my own, so I decided to come back to my root, my deepest root, and that was Scranton.
And do you have siblings?
I have one brother in Sarasota, Florida. And that's it, just one older brother.
Well, then he couldn't help you very much taking care of your parents, could he?
not at all.
Not from there, no.
No.
Okay, so you were a caregiver too in the middle of all this. So did you start your business while you were still being a caregiver?
No, I didn't, actually. Okay. I started my business in August of 2016. Okay. My dad passed in February of 2016. Mm-hmm. So it was a transforming year for me.
There was a
lot of change. And so I was a caregiver, although my father was in assisted living and then ultimately a nursing home. I would drive from northern New Jersey to Scranton once to twice a week, every week, for 3 years.
Yeah.
So, that was grueling, but, I wanted to be here for my dad as much as I could, but it was very difficult. So after he passed and I moved into his home, I took some time for myself and I decided what it is I wanted to do. And I opened my business, because I felt I had a calling to do that.
And where is your business?
My business is in my home.
Okay.
And it could be in your home. It could be in anyone's home. So
okay.
I travel in the area. I travel to Wilkes-Barre, up to Dalton, Clark Summit, German. I've been, I go here, there, and everywhere, or else people can come to my home now, which is nice.
Is that where you have the group sessions?
Yes, I have 3 to 5 women in group. It's really a small group session.
Mm-hmm.
So I do 3 to 5 people here. We could also meet at a park if I had more, but I don't. It's generally 3 to 5 women. They're usually friends or relations that come together, which is nice. And that's generally the way it works right now. I'm just kind of getting my feet wet.
Sounds like it's a good first step. I mean, it sounds solid, and it sounds like you've got a lot of history and training for people to consider this. So more power to you on all that. Let's switch this around now. I'm very interested, given what you've just said about starting your own business and being involved with people who've been, I guess you would say, in a state of dementia and caregiving. It means there was a lot of responsibility on your shoulders financially as well. So let's go back and talk about the types of beliefs and systems that you've learned as a child and how that impacted who you are today. So let's start with the first question. What was your family like while you were growing up?
We lived of modest means. My father ruled the roost. He handled all the money.
Yeah.
My mom worked in a sewing machine factory for many years, and then she was a waitress right here in Dunmore for many, many years. But my dad pretty much handled all the money. He would work at the German and Casey Hotel when I was a child as a bellhop. And then when I was about 9 years old, he got a job at Tobahana. And for my father had a 7th grade education, that was a pretty terrific job.
Mm-hmm.
And so he held on to that job for, I believe my father was at Tobahana for 38 years until his retirement.
Wow. There's so many people from our area who work there and have those numbers, like 25, 30 years. You know, it's great to see that, because that's a dying thing. You know, people just don't stay in one place for too very long. So what's your first memory around money?
My first memory around money was approximately 5 or 6 years old, I guess. And my father would come home on Friday afternoons, and he had an envelope from the bank. And I remember it had exactly 5 20s in it. And he would give my mother 2 20s, and we would go to the Giant Market down on Blakely Street, and we would have an entire basket full of groceries from that $40. My other memory about money, and I think this is important, is a few years ago, before my mother passed, we were talking about my childhood, and I had said to her, one of my favorite meals as a kid was pancakes, and we always had pancakes for dinner in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother said to me, do you know why we ate pancakes on Friday nights? And I said, no, because like that was like the best meal ever. It was just pancakes. And she said, Dory, that was because we had no food until your father came home. Like, you know, until your father came home with the grocery money. There was no food for anything. There was no money for food for anything else. So that's why we ate pancakes. So, yeah.
But that,
so he'd come home and...
Those were pancakes, though, that had nothing in them. They were just pancakes, right?
That's right.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes there was maple syrup, and sometimes there wasn't. Sometimes there was just jelly, and sometimes there was sugar and cinnamon. I mean, but to me, that was a great meal. I didn't realize we were poor. I didn't realize we were hand-to-mouth. You know, I was clueless.
Well, most people didn't. I mean, it's just how it was. You had nothing to compare yourself to, so that was just normal. And I think so many of the women that I've talked to on these podcasts will say the same thing. I didn't recognize at all. I didn't know that we were poor, because you didn't. It's just how it was. So what lessons about money did you learn when you were growing up?
Well, I learned to hold on. I'm a saver. Okay. I learned how to hold on and always put a little aside for a rainy day, because the future is never promised, and it's always good to have a little tucked away, and there's always an emergency. And so I'm a saver. I'm a saver, and I'm an investor. And I'm pretty aggressive about it.
All right. I like that even better. Well, you know that most women generally are very conservative investors anyway. So it's great to hear somebody say you're aggressive, because that's really where the juice is, you know, but can't explain that to somebody who feels so uncomfortable about risk. So what jobs or careers have you experienced up to this time in your life?
Oh, gosh. Well, I was also a waitress like my mom through high school.
Where was that?
I also worked at Elby's and Franklin's in Dunmore.
Okay.
And then I worked at the Ramada up in Clark Summit through high school, and Denny's up on Route 6 all through high school. Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell me about some of the diners and some of the local places, but yeah,
no.
You're good. Okay. What has been the most threatening to your financial security?
The most threatening thing that ever happened to my financial security was when the market crashed. My husband and I at the time, we lost a lot of money, and we hung in there. And
good
to
for
look
you.
At that, to look at that, oh my gosh, you have to have a strong stomach, because we lost a boatload of money, and we just hung in there. Mm-hmm. And we sailed through. Yeah. And I just have this one piece of advice that someone gave me, and I think it's really sage advice about the stock market, is this. Wow. First, you have to have a strong stomach. The second thing is, you can't look at things for 6 months or 3 months or a year. When you're in the stock market, you have to look over periods of time, 10 years, 20 years, because there's an ebb and flow to the market. And you know what? If you want those big investments, you're going to have days when you're going to have years when you're going to have a 15%, gain. And then next year, you're going to be down 11%. But you know what? If you hang in there and you just stay with it, over a period of time, you multiply that out, you're going to have a nice return on your investment. Just ride out the storm as long as you can. And, yeah, but you do have to have a strong stomach, and you do have to hang in there.
Well said.
Thank you.
Well said. It's just so rare to hear a woman say something like that. But I know that your husband is in the business too, right?
My husband was in the business, yes.
Yeah.
And but he's not as aggressive as I am. I'm much more aggressive.
No kidding. You're more aggressive than him?
Yes. Yes, I told him to get into healthcare many years ago, because I saw the writing on the wall with healthcare, and I was like, get in that. And and he's like, oh my gosh, how did you know that? I said, common sense. Common sense.
Well, then I think maybe you're doing the wrong thing, Dorothy. I think you ought to be a prognosticator for the markets. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
That would be fun. I mean, there's plenty of people out there that get paid millions of dollars just to have an opinion on things, right or wrong. It doesn't make a difference. I say it's almost like the weather people. You know, you get to predict the weather, but if it doesn't work out, you can always blame Mother Nature. So,
that's
you know, yeah. So in this business too, it's kind of the same thing. You can say whatever you want to say, and if it doesn't turn out, you can always just pass it off to somebody else. What are some of the events that have happened in your life that you would describe as defining moments? I think we know one.
The birth of my four children.
Yes, for sure.
That's a huge one for me. Being a mom is the most defining moment of my life, was being a mom, having the privilege of being a mom to my children, having the responsibility of growing young men and women.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, and I know it's cliche, but I do feel it is the greatest job. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I really feel like that was it for me. That was the epitome of my life right there, was just being able to have the privilege of staying home with them. And I thank my husband very much for that, of carrying the weight of the financial weight of our home and our household, by allowing me to stay home. I'm very grateful for that.
And I think the other one I was thinking of is that moment when you were on the dance floor and you decided, I cannot be like this. And that was truly a turning point in your life. There's one thing I wanted to ask you about that, because I've always been curious about people who lose weight or who just set themselves up mentally and say, I've reached that point where it's time for me to do something different. How is it that how do you keep yourself on track with that when there are so many challenges along the way?
I think it's for me personally, it's I have to take care of my vessel because it's not anyone else's responsibility. I don't want to leave it in my children's hands. It's not anyone else's responsibility or business. It's mine. If you had a car, this is always the one I use. If you had one car when you were 15 years old and someone gave you this great Mercedes and said, this is the only car you're going to ever have in your entire life, and it's your job to either take care of it or not, would you? Well, of course, because if it's the only car you're ever going to have in your life, you're going to put good fuel in, you're going to put oil in, you're going to take care of it. Most people. But we look at our body somehow differently. We just think, oh, you know what? I'm just a little overweight. Oh, I'm just going to eat that extra piece of cake. Oh, I'm not that fat. And that's where I was at. I had no idea I was as fat as I was because I was very busy being a mom. And so I just finished everyone's food, ate everything. But as soon as I switched gears and tapped into something that was mine, which was dancing before I was a mom, I reconnected to that girl. And that's when I knew I wasn't even on the radar anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy mackerel, what have I done? Like, here I am so busy putting all my eggs in one basket with my children. I'm not taking care of me, which in turn isn't going to help them at all long term.
That
was my big moment. That was my big epiphany. I know it sounds like, oh, that's like very, egotistical or it's selfish. It's the exact opposite of that. Because you want to be your very best for your children, for your grandchildren eventually. And I don't want to be like the grandma who's, unfortunately sitting at home with oxygen like my mom, like with the oxygen and couldn't move off the couch, and couldn't really do anything with the children, and she didn't like that either, but it's where she was in her life. And it was unfortunate. I wasn't going to be that. And so that's when my big epiphany really came to me personally.
Okay, but then let me throw out some, I'm going to be a devil's advocate here and throw out some for instances. Let's say with the four children, you had a birthday party at the house and you had a wonderful cake and all kinds of things for the kids. You shouldn't be eating that cake because it probably wasn't something that was on any list of healthful things that you were trying to follow. So when the kids would say to you, Mom, here, have a piece of my birthday cake, how did you deal with that?
Oh, I ate the cake. Oh, yeah. I don't think you could ever do something 100%, no matter, and this has been my success. My success has been, you cannot tell yourself, oh, I can never eat cake again. Have the piece of cake at your kid's birthday. You just can't eat the whole cake is what I used to do. You can't eat the whole cake. You can't eat every bit that's left over. Have a slice of cake. Have a scoop of ice cream. Moderation.
You would eat the rest of the cake?
I would eat the entire cake. And then throw everything away and pretend like there wasn't a cake.
Okay. I understand then how you got to where you were.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow.
I did it.
That is huge, though, for you to go from that kind of eating to what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
More power to you, girl. I just think that is amazing. I didn't realize that's where you got to.
Oh, yeah, I did.
That's major to go from that to where you are today. Wow. Good for you. I think it's great. Let me ask you some of the questions. Do you ever see yourself being retired?
No. Oh, God, no. No, never.
Why?
I have too much living to do. I'm very nosy. I'm very interested in many different things. I'm interested in people. I'm interested in traveling. I'm interested in cultures and cooking and food and everything under the sun. I'm a very curious person. Mm-hmm. And I'm a nosy person, so I want to just stick my nose in and learn. I'm a learner. And okay. I know I'll never stop. I'll never stop learning. Therefore, I'll never find myself retired. I'll never settle.
Well, maybe the important question here would be, what's your definition of retirement?
Well, I look at like people who are retired who just go through like the monotony of a schedule every day. I don't want to have an everyday schedule where, you know, I eat cornflakes on Monday and, you know, and yogurt on Tuesday every single week. I can't do that. Yeah. I just look at retirement as a monotony, as of a just giving up and, you know, hanging up my shoes and saying, hey, that's it. That's all I'm going to be doing for today. Leave it for the next guy. I can't ever see myself doing that.
I was watching something on television the other day about a woman, maybe it was even on Facebook, I'm not sure where it was. I think it was TV, of a woman who was 92 years old and dancing, and she's a yoga instructor.
Oh, that's Tao Porchan. We're Facebook friends too. Isn't she amazing?
Yes.
She's an amazing human being, and she said age is just a number.
That's what I think of when I think of you doing that. You know, is to say that you just continuously are looking at that kind of a personality that says I'm just never going to stop, and I think that's who that lady is too. I mean, it must have been Facebook. Must have been.
It is. It's Tao Porchan Lynch is her name, and I believe she's up in Massachusetts or Connecticut.
Okay.
And that's her name. And yeah, she's definitely someone that I admire, and I would say has a great attitude about life and living.
Oh, that's a great role model. I think it's wonderful to think about, think the way she thinks. It's great. Would you do anything differently? Any regrets?
Many regrets. Many regrets. I'd be a better daughter. I'd be a much better daughter. I would have given my parents a lot more time. I would have cared less about how clean and organized my house was, and I would have played Legos with my kids a lot more on the floor. Mm-hmm. I'd be a better listener. I'd be a better mom. I'd be a better daughter. I really think that I prioritized things wrong. Not wrong, but just differently. I cared too much about the cleanliness of the home and just the chores. And I wish I spent more time with my parents, and I wish I spent more time with my children growing up.
Well, maybe you'll have a chance now to spend more time with your grandchildren.
Eventually.
Yeah. You can make up for that.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely not something that's cast in concrete, so to speak. Who was the most influential woman in your life, and what advice did she give you?
The most influential woman in my life would have to be my Aunt Dorothy.
Your namesake?
She is my namesake. I was born on her birthday. She's my dad's.
Cool.
She's my my father's older sister. She's still living, still with us. And, when I was a very little girl, my aunt used to take me. She has three daughters, and she used to take me on vacation and just pull in, come in, take me, I was just one more. And she's an extremely disciplined person, and she's always had her shit together. I probably can't say that. She's always had her act. She's always had her act together, and she's always been a very balanced person. And she's such a lady, and I just admire her so much. She's always taken the high road, and she's someone I admire very much, and I try to emulate her, because she's another very deep root for me.
Well, did she give you any specific advice, or is it just that by observing who she was and how she was with the world that you consider that to be the role model?
Exactly. She always, she never gave me any specific advice. She wouldn't dare. She was a very accepting person. She's always been the type of woman who's taken the high road and with a lot of grace. She has a lot of grace, and she just she's just a lovely, beautiful woman. I've learned a lot from her.
That sounds really good. It's nice to have one of those role models in your life. Thanks to my guest, Dorothy Vaidata Chow, who's the owner of Alta Gracia. To all of you in my Power of the Purse community, I hope today's podcast was helpful in enriching your understanding of money and how it can help you achieve your life goals. If you'd like to spend 15 minutes on a call with me and ask me questions about your personal finances, please go to my website, powerofthepursepodcast.com, select the contact tab, and find a time that works for you. Thanks again, Dorothy, for sharing your time and your knowledge. Until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to lynnsevans.com/call and sign up for an exclusive one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.